What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for being a listener of the Elective Rotation, a critical care and hospital pharmacy podcast. This is episode 530. This podcast has recently passed the five-year milestone, something that couldn't be possible without all the support and kind words of encouragement from you, the listeners of the podcast and readers of the blog. Thank you so much to those that have been there from the beginning, the middle, and to those that are just now tuning in. Here's to the next 5 years. To have all the evidence supporting today's show, linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode1. This is episode 1, Pharmacist Response to Code Blue and Rapid Response. Why should pharmacy respond to codes? It's pretty simple. Patients will die less often if a pharmacist is there. There was an article published in Pharmacotherapy 2007 by Bond and Rail, and they found that there were about 7 clinical pharmacy services that resulted in lower mortality amongst hospitals in the United States. And one of those 7 was pharmacist participation on a cardiopulmonary resuscitation team. Now, that's great. It's good to have data behind that. But I think even without the data, we should be there. You wouldn't jump out of an airplane without a parachute. So why would you push medications in a high-stress environment with lots of chance for error and lots of decisions being made without a pharmacist? That's just my opinion. So let's start by talking about the roles and expectations of a pharmacist at a code. I break this down into 4 roles. The first role is assume responsibility for the provision of pharmacotherapy. Now, what does that mean? That means you should be able to locate and obtain the necessary medications quickly and easily. You should be able to calculate doses, rates, and concentrations correctly. You should prepare and label medications appropriately, and you should provide IV compatibility information. Now, I'll talk a little bit about each of those. At my hospital, we have a Pyxis machine, and so that means that in addition to medications in the code cart, there may be extra medications that I need in the Pyxis machine. So I need to know ahead of time, do I need a witness when I'm going to go and grab that fentanyl, or am I on a floor when I don't need a witness? Is the medication even in the Pyxis? If it's not, what's the quickest way to get it? Who do I call in the main pharmacy? Where's my tube station? And who can I send out of the code to go get that medication and bring it to me so that I don't have to leave the room to go hunting for it at the tube station? You'll find when you respond to codes, if your hospital's anything like mine, there are way too many people in that room. And so there's always going to be extra people outside the room, and they're going to be there to run for you. So you just look at someone and say, can you please go to the tube station, get me this medication when it comes? They'll bring it to you. Calculating doses, rates, and concentrations, you should be able to do that correctly, quickly. You don't want to get too hung up on the calculation on certain medications in a code. For example, anything that can be titrated, don't stress about the patient's weight. Eyeball their weight. Give a rough estimate. Ask anybody in the room if they have an estimate they want to give you. Maybe you can't see the patient that well. Maybe the nurse does have the weight available. But for the main administration of these things like norepinephrine, epinephrine infusions, dopamine, whatever you're using, you can just get it started at any weight and titrate up and down. And then when the time comes, you get the exact weight, then you can change the rate and the weight on the smart pump at that time. Preparing and labeling medications appropriately. This is something I focus on quite a bit when I'm in a code. There are times when I don't label a medication, when I am going to immediately hand it to the person administering. I know it's going to be administered, and there's not going to be any left over. or perhaps even the extra 2 seconds it takes to put a label on is going to make a difference in the patient's outcome. And so I don't even want to wait that long. But for the overwhelming majority of time, I label everything that I draw up. Otherwise, why am I there? That's one of the key things that a pharmacist can offer. One person focusing on the drugs, make sure that there are no errors from mislabeling. My labels are made with tape, and I'll just write on a piece of tape the contents of the syringe, and I'll flag it on the syringe. But I make sure that I do that absolutely whenever possible. Preparing medications appropriately, I look at this in a very specific way where it's not good enough for me to have in my pocket a norepinephrine drip. That doesn't do the patient any good. That doesn't do the nurse any good. I want the IV tubing. I'm going to connect the IV tubing. I'm going to prime that line so that it is in the most readily administrable form for that nurse so that they can just take it, throw it on the smart pump. I'll program the smart pump if I'm close to it and I have time to. But if I can't reach it, I may just pass things over. If it's not going to make a difference in the patient's outcome, I will take the time to label the IV line. I label it in 2 spots. I label it up top so you can see where the bag is hanging, so it's easy to trace that down into the right smart pump. And then I label a second place really close to the port where anything might be injected so that it's easy for a nurse when there's 5 drips going to see where everything is running. And for labeling the IV line, my hospital requires you put the name of the drug and the date and time that you hung that bag. And that's so the line can be changed out, or the tubing can be changed out every 24 hours. And so that's one thing. Another thing is just drawing a medication up in a syringe, that's not completely preparing it for dispensing. If you hand that to a nurse, the nurse needs more than just the medication in the syringe to administer it. That nurse needs an alcohol wipe and at least 1, preferably 2, 10cc normal saline flushes. I unwrap my flushes and I pull back slightly on the plunger first to prime that flush before squirting a little bit out the top and recapping it and handing that over to the nurse. If you prime the flushes, then there's no chance of them accidentally pushing too fast to overcome that resistance that you get without priming. And, that can adversely affect an IV site if that happens. IV compatibility information, get an app on your smartphone that'll do that. LexiComp is great. Another thing you can do is kind of just remember the basics. Sodium bicarb doesn't like catecholamines, so separate those. And, learn your rules, learn your exceptions, and remember your IV compatibility of your critical care medications that way. That way you're not kind of stressing out about looking those up quickly in a code. The second role for the pharmacist at a code is to actively participate in medical decision making. And that means you get to make treatment recommendations, and you get to help determine the cause of that patient's deterioration. And you'll get better at this as you go along and get more experience. You want to take your observations into account. You want to give your opinion on doses based on what the intention of that medication is. And, if the patient is stabilized or you're in between rounds of drugs, you want to look in the computer. You want to look at recent medications that patient got. You want to look at lab values. You want to try and find their past medical history, history of present illness, figure out what went wrong. See if you can offer any input in determining the cause of deterioration, and then offer that to the person leading the code. The third role for a pharmacist in a code is to anticipate the patient and provider needs and prepare in advance to meet those needs. One of my favorite sayings is, if I have it in my pocket, then I won't need it. But but I put it in my pocket anyway, because oftentimes there's a chance I am going to need a medication based on something I see. An easy example for this is when you intubate a patient, you can reasonably predict that their blood pressure is going to drop as a result of their cardiac output being lower from positive pressure in their thoracic cavity. Now, so fluid bolus might fix that. So you should make sure that you've got IV tubing, a liter of saline, and a smart pump so that you can start a fluid bolus if needed for that patient. Perhaps they're going to need a pressor. And so you should also make sure that you have in the room the pressor needed for that patient, the most appropriate pressor, which we will cover in a future episode. But you want that in your pocket. And so if you see that the patient is going to be intubated, you want to predict and move past just the drugs that you might use for intubation and see what are the possible complications of intubation. What medication should I have at my fingertips should any of those complications arise? And rule number four is to function as a knowledgeable team member. Now, what I mean by this is there's going to be plenty of times when there's nothing for the pharmacist to do, but that doesn't mean that you can't help out your team, help the patient. Maybe you need to pass over the 10cc syringe to inflate the ET tube cuff. Maybe in the scramble, CO2 detector was missing, and you should know what that looks like, and you should know, where could you find that in the mess of stuff that was taken out of the code cart, so that you can give that to the respiratory therapist. Maybe you see somebody without gloves; you can pass them over some gloves. Anything at all in the code cart, you should at least have some idea of what it is. Pass over an IV start kit. So that you can help your team. So that takes practice as well. That's going to take you reviewing what's in your code cart. You're going to learn more, the more codes you go to. And, other team members that, you should expect at the code, that you will be helping, is the patient's nurse, the critical care nurse, if the code happened out of, the ICU. A respiratory therapist, usually more than one respond. There should be a patient care technician there. They're usually the ones doing chest compressions. And then a hospitalist of some sort, or an intensivist, cardiologist, whatever physician is there at the code. So now I want to talk a little bit about how to respond to these codes. The first thing that you want to do your best to do is remain calm. It is a stressful situation, but you're not going to be helping anybody out if you are anxious. So take a deep breath, remain calm. Each code is going to be a different scenario. You want to be alert and you want to pay attention to your surroundings and look out for what might be different in this scenario, what might be similar from ones that you've been in. You're going to become more comfortable each time that you attend a code. Nobody is comfortable responding to codes. It is a critical point in a patient's care, and often doesn't have pleasant endings. So don't ever set the bar so high for yourself that you're going to just walk into each code and be completely comfortable with what's going on. As far as notification at my hospital, there's an overhead page system. And then about a minute later, the code comes through on the beeper. Just keep that in mind. If you, maybe you're in a meeting room where there's no overhead speaker, you'll hear it on the beeper, but you'll be about a minute or so behind everybody else. To reach the site of the code, take the stairs whenever possible. I can't tell you, how many times early on I got stuck in an elevator stopping it at every floor, and that's just no good. So hop in the stairs and take them whenever you can. When you enter the room or the area where there is the code, you want to identify yourself to staff already in attendance. You can just say something like, "I'm pharmacy. I'm a pharmacist." Anything you're comfortable with. Just so people know who you are, they know what they can expect of you, and they know that you're there. Now, the first thing that I do when I walk into one of these rooms is I look right at the patient. There's going to be a ton of people in this room. It's going to be tough to see the patient. You got to look at the patient first. Are there chest compressions being performed? Okay, we know it's a code. Does the patient seem to have a pulse, but they're in respiratory distress? Are they completely unresponsive? Are they alert and talking? Maybe it was just a syncope, which always gets called as a code, and then the patient's chatting away, sitting up when everyone arrives. Then after that, take a look around. What other team members do you see present? If the medication tray has not been removed from the code cart and they're doing chest compressions, you want to remove it from the cart, place that on a flat surface, and you want to open the plastic wrapping if that's what's on your tray. If the medication tray has already been removed, you want to find out who is operating that tray and offer to assume responsibility for the medications. I'm a pharmacist. Can I help you with the medications? I've never had someone say, no, I want to do the medications on my own. Then you want to identify who is that physician running the code. You want to identify the nurse recording events, and you want to identify the nurse administering medications. And the reason I'm looking for those three is I'm looking to the physician to listen for orders, to hear what's going on. I want to be able to communicate to the nurse recording events what I'm handing over, and I'm going to be asking them perhaps, when was the last epi given? I usually time the epi on a stopwatch on my smartphone because I found that without that, epi is going to be given every 45 seconds. Nobody waits 3 to 5 minutes between rounds of epi because when the patient's trying to die on you, time just seems to stand still. So everyone loses the concept of how long 3 minutes is. And then I want to identify the nurse administering medications because I want to know who am I giving my medications, my alcohol swabs, my flushes to. You want to stand by the medication tray. You want to be in sight of the physician running the code so that they can look at you for orders and communication. And if possible, you want to be in view of the ECG monitor because when you see the VFib on that monitor, you can go right to the amiodarone. You don't have to wait. You know the patient's pulseless, you see VFib on the monitor, then you're just going to go drop 300 of amio, and it's going to be ready by the time the physician is calling for it. So that's my starting position, if I can get there ideally. At the start of the code, I'm going to open and assemble an epinephrine syringe, because I know no matter what pulseless pathway we're going down, I'm going to need epinephrine. I'm going to grab about 6 flushes and I'm going to prime them for immediate use, like I described earlier. I'm going to start putting needles on syringes. I'll do first a needle on a 10 ml syringe because in my code card, I either got 3 or 10 mLs. So I'm going to make sure I have enough to drop 300 epi right away. Then I'm going to locate any additional supplies as necessary for the requested medications like IV tubing or whatnot. Stay focused on the physician running the code and then go from there. We'll continue this discussion in the next episode. Please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcatcher. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.